Hey, watch this episode on YouTube.
If you need to record a podcast remotely, riverside.fm is the place to do it. Alex and I have been making Two Dudes Watch Cartoons remotely across states, pretty much across the continental U.S. for 3 years now. We've tried several things, and this is what works best, honestly.
Zoom turned out terrible. We used a couple other ones that we paid for that turned out terrible.
You're looking at the interface right now. I think I'm doing the screen record correctly.
Riverside has made doing this podcast as easy as possible. Riverside FM.
Head to the link in our bio to get started. That's riverside.fm.
Today.
Today.
Two dudes watch cartoons. Yeah.
Welcome back to Two Dudes Watch Cartoons, the podcast where two dudes, that is us, watch cartoons. My name is Evan.
And my name is Alex. And today we got a fun one, and we are joined by a great guest. We have Gideon Gordon himself. Oh, I'm just kidding. Excuse me. We have Gideon Vergadamo here joining us today. New to the podcast. Gideon, I'm just going off your Instagram bio here. It says you are an art director at LEGO and you draw comics. Tell the audience a little about yourself. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I am really I'm stoked to be here. I'm an art director at LEGO. What that entails for what I do is I am in charge of coming up with window displays for LEGO retail. That's kind of like the main focus. I do in-store signage, promotional content, that kind of stuff. So it's pretty cool. I have a background in more traditional advertising. So like campaign work for different brands. So this is a little bit of a departure, but it's certainly fun working for a toy company. And as far as the comics go, that's just kind of, I went to school for cartooning and illustration. So it's always something that I try and keep in my life in some degree. So that's what the Instagram is for. And then, the day gig is designing windows for LEGO.
That's a pretty sweet gig, getting to say you work for LEGO. Are in your own personal life is you know, was LEGO like a hobby, a passion growing up, or do you like to keep some distance? Is it like that's work?
Keep working, play separate.
Yeah. So you know, ironically, like growing up, LEGO was not in my household. We were a Playmobil family.
We won't make sure they don't hear this. Just kidding.
Yeah. Which is. It's not something that I, advertise, but as an adult, I don't know, you can see the Home Alone house behind me, but
yeah, I'm not going to lie, I recognized it too. I was like, that's the Home Alone house. I did. I've seen it. I am similar to you. There was no Legos in my household, but my cousin's household not only had Legos, but it had two huge buckets full of thousands of Legos, and that was just the most fun memories I have. That shit was the best.
Dude, it's rad. I mean, as an adult, you can definitely get into it, and I certainly have been diving in to familiarize myself with the brand. I've been there about a year and a half, so I'm certainly a believer in LEGO now. Sweet. as a grown man.
I actually know for a fact you can get into it as an adult, and I myself am worried, especially since the pandemic. I've been this close to buying like really expensive Lego setups, and I'm like, oh, if I start, I know there's no end in sight.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, it is like that. It is very much like that.
Is it one of those things though, where like once people in your life find out, it's like every occasion, every holiday becomes like, oh, here's a nice we were thinking of you. We were in the Lego aisle.
Got you this nice Lego.
Here's another set.
Well, it's
the curse.
The reverse problem where I feel like there is this weird expectation that I'm going to be giving those.
You gotta bring the Lego set. Yes.
Already for Christmas, I'm assuming.
Where's our Scott Pilgrim Lego set? You didn't bring that to I'm just kidding.
I know, right? What the hell? Yeah, so it's kind of the reverse where I feel like now there's an expectation. But yeah, as far as like, you know, every person in my 6 degrees of separation will send me a video of cool Lego art or whatever it is. And I'm like, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, that's what we do.
That's me with the New Yorker cartoons. Everyone's like, oh, you should do this as a comic.
Yeah.
I'll get to it.
I bet. I'm sure. Yeah, man. Totally.
That is funny. Well, thank you again for joining us. We're excited. I don't even know we've said it. Today, we're covering another new one. Fresh, hot off the presses, we're covering Scott Pilgrim Takes Off, the new Netflix animated adaptation. Last time, we covered a live adaptation on Netflix. They're just like, let's just switch the medium of all these projects. Yeah, but after finishing it, I don't think this is a spoiler, / hopefully you've seen it. I think this should have always been animated.
Oh, totally.
I feel that. Yeah.
I think the first movie is great. I love the first movie, but like this feels right watching all of this. It was just like, this should have been animated from the jump.
So, brief history. Scott Pilgrim is based off a comic series by Brian Lee O'Malley that ran from 2004 to 2010. 2010 is when the adaptation directed by Edgar Wright came out, starring Michael Cera. Mary Elizabeth Winstead, whole bunch of other really super famous people now. What was everyone's, I guess, personal histories with Scott Pilgrim prior, I guess, up to the movie or relationship with the movie and or comic book up to this point?
For me, it was the movie adaptation. That was kind of my introduction to the whole story. And I saw it in theaters, but what was cool about it was that was before smartphones were really like smartphones. So it was like I was going in completely blind. I had no idea what the movie was about. I just knew, you know, Michael Cera was in it. He was kind of the hot ticket item at the time. So
yeah,
I went to it and I'm sitting in the theater and it kind of like started with like the kind of 8-bit Universal Pictures kind of opening. And I was like, all right, interesting. But about the time the opening credits started and they start doing that like infinite zoom out and the graphics are playing over them, like, and it's Sex Bomb and they're playing the song. I was just like, all right, like, this is sick. Like I wasn't anticipating it at all. So that was like my first introduction and probably only like the second Edgar Wright film I had seen, the first, being Shaun of the Dead, which is
classic.
Awesome.
I'm not going to lie, I didn't make that connection.
That was kind of, like my second kind of dipping my toes into that style of filmmaking and how he's, you know, has such like a unique vision for things. But yeah, that was my introduction to Scott Pilgrim was the movie in 2010. And then maybe 5-6 years later, it took me to actually get around to reading the books, which were also incredible. So,
Alex, what about you?
I think everyone knows this. You're at home, you're on the couch, you flip on FX, and you just watch the movie of whatever's on at the moment. And I was like, oh, Michael Cera. I was like, I love Superbad. I think Superbad's one of the funniest movies of all time. I was like, hell yeah. And kind of like you, didn't know what I was getting myself into at all. But by the end of it, I was like obsessed. It, very true to my nature. You know, knew nothing, but by the end, I was like, I need to consume it all. And what's so funny is I started reading the comics, but I never finished them. I don't know why, what happened. It wasn't lack of interest. I am just lazy. But I love Scott Pilgrim.
I'm just illiterate.
Just kind of illiterate. Not a very fast reader, and that's just factual, actually. So it's a graphic novel, so that's even worse.
I was totally teasing.
I'm joking. I'm joking. But I feel like the original movie taught me like some important life lessons as a young man, like about to go to college. Like they were like, you shouldn't be fighting with your new girl's exes. Like that's the past is the past. Like that's a really important lesson. And like also just the like I really love how it embraces this thing of like, oh, we're fighting for Ramona, but the whole time she's like, no, that like I'm not. Like it's so I love everything about it, and I think this adaptation was spectacular. We'll get into why I think that, but like, oh, I'm just so excited that this is back. all the same actors reprise their roles. Absolutely stunning. And yeah, it was probably 2010, whenever, so maybe 2011 when FX got it. Yeah, whenever it starts getting picked up on cable.
I threw it on this morning. Holds up incredible. It has an 82% on Rotten Tomatoes. Mm. You know, it's pretty fair. I'd say that's fair for a Rotten Tomatoes score. Not that I love Rotten Tomatoes. Box office take of $48.3 million, and I believe the budget was larger. And they do have a pretty stacked cast, but I think by that count, the box office run at least probably lost a little bit of money. But it is sort of a film cult with classic. A cult following, like a huge following at this point. So the Netflix adaptation is animated. It's like this anime animated by a studio called Science Saru. They did the Food Chain episode of Adventure Time. It's like a really trippy one. Where
that's a throwback.
Jake and Finn go through the. They've done some other really well known movies, but announced a couple years ago. The major selling point was all of the original cast is returning, and that immediately piqued my interest. Mm-hmm. But I still feel like I had a little bit of cautious optimism going in. I expected to enjoy it. I don't think I expected to enjoy the anime as much as I have, and I really want to go back and watch it now. But what did you guys expect going in?
Yeah, I was kind of in the same boat. There was a lot about it that I was getting excited for, but I was like, yeah, there was a lot of cautious optimism going in, just because you know how these things can go, especially if you like build up the expectation. Mm-hmm. I also had seen Brian Lee O'Malley had posted on his social media kind of like a warning to his followers. I don't know if you guys had seen that, but he was very clear with people who followed him that what they were doing with this was a big departure from the books and the film. So to keep an open mind. And I read that and I was like, I wonder what that means. I think all of us, you know, have a sense of what he meant by that once you get through the series. But yeah, I was just kind of like getting ready and anticipating something different, but I didn't know how different. I will say it is a lot different than I expected. I was kind of split between these two worlds of like respecting the hell out of the fact that he just did this fresh new thing and delivered something completely different. But then there was like this fanboy part of me, like that kind of like audience of dudes who's like, oh, it's not original to the source material. And I wanted a pure adaptation of the, you know, graphic novels. And where's, you know, there was so much rich source material to pull from, blah, blah, blah. Like, I kind of am split between those two mindsets with it. But
those two
worlds. I think that is the concern, is like, once you hear it's being adapted by Netflix into anime, it's like, okay, I've seen the movie. I may have gone back and read the books. Like, what more can they do? And I didn't really expect them to turn it completely on its head. I've seen like reviews saying it's more of like a remix than a sequel or an adaptation directly.
It really smacked me out of left field, like you guys are saying. I was expecting a adaptation of the graphic novels. Like, that was what I was going in expecting. And you can quit it pretty quickly, realize, oh, that's, you know, not what's happening here, which I appreciate so much, because, and I feel like I'm a broken record. I said this maybe like a month ago on our Adventure Time Fiona and Cake one. If you're going to take, if in this world of reboots, sequels, like no original property, if you're going to take something that we already know, I would love a new story, a new spin on it. And so I actually think remix is an interesting term. I hadn't thought of what I would classify it as, but I love what they did with it. I think it is so clever, so fun. And I think it all starts with the title. It's called Scott Pilgrim Takes Off. And so before I watched the show, I saw a tweet where someone goes, well, it is called Scott Pilgrim Takes Off. And I, because I had not seen the show, could not contextualize what that meant, but it stuck with me. And I was like, what do they mean by that? And so when Scott takes off, I was like, oh. And I'm not going to lie, I thought it was really fun though. And a nice, and especially once you get to the end, it all kind of makes sense why it, I thought it was great. I think it was really true to the characters but just a little bit of a different story for them.
Let me read a quick synopsis that I think covers all versions of the Scott Pilgrim story, but it's from Letterboxd. Scott Pilgrim meets the girl of his dreams, Ramona Flowers, only to find out her seven evil exes stand in the way of their love. And so that's sort of the base, the foundational lore and mythos of Scott Pilgrim that we expand upon. And that's the starting point of this this animated adaptation. And pretty briskly covers most beats in the movie, probably like half of the movie itself up until a point in the very first episode, and leaves this cliffhanger ending on the first episode that makes the whole series like a little more interesting and immediately catches you off guard. And I guess I can stop, we can stop beating around the bush. Scott Pilgrim dies at the end of episode one. And I was like, oh, that's
what?
That's interesting. I don't know what the rest of the,
not what happened.
I was like, maybe I haven't read graphic novels. I don't know. I don't remember at this point.
I know. Well, I kind of felt like, with that, it's like we were almost lulled into a false sense of comfort with that first episode. You were like, oh, this might just be a straight, you know, word for word adaptation of the best parts of the books and the best parts of the movie. Like, and I was so tricked by the end. I was just like, oh, and that's same thing. It was like I had seen the little hints about like, well, it is called Takes Off. And I was just like, what?
Yeah.
But then I didn't understand like, oh, like, literally. All. Yeah.
So good. I actually think as like a writer of like any sort of book, script, what have you, when you can lull your audience into a false sense of security like that, chef's kiss, nothing better. I love being lulled into a false sense of security and then the rug being pulled out from under me. I do. It's maybe my favorite thing in all of entertainment.
No, it was good. They nailed that part of it.
I'm going to get into more spoilers here, but I really like that we're led to believe that he literally died. Like, we're like, oh, he's just
for
gone.
For most of the series, yeah.
Yeah.
I think most of the way through the series, like once a couple episodes in, I was like, I was pretty content with that fact. I was like,
oh, I was too.
I still love where the series is going. That said, if it had been a straight on adaptation, that false sense of security was so nice. It is like an old friend, you know, like a warm, cozy blanket. And Scott Pilgrim is this perfect property to sort of be adapted in that way. And rewatching the movie today, I was like, man, the live action movie is about like as it is, it celebrates the comic book medium, video games, it celebrates all of that stuff so vividly, and it's such a joy to watch, and it's like I don't know,
visually it reminds me of Speed Racer. Do you guys remember the live action Speed Racer?
Vaguely. I need to revisit it. I watched it in theaters, I think.
Wow. But like, you know, the live action, they'll have like the kapow when he punches and the sound effects. It's great. To me, it's like a comic book, video game, anime, all just rolled into one. It's my favorite things. Yeah. I could cry.
So Scott dies at the hands of the first evil ex
Matthew
at
Patel.
The Battle of the Bands, Matthew Patel.
Yeah. And he's sick. He's got a ton of great magic, which I feel like, is that in the live movie? Does he do great magic like that?
Yeah, so. And interestingly enough, it's like, those were the moments that I was most excited for, are some of the things that, for me anyway, in the live adaptation with the film, it was like, it just didn't quite hit in the way, like it was like this doesn't quite translate, but like those were the moments in the animation that I was like super stoked for. And yeah, so it was just like some things just I think translate better in an animated format. So but yeah, he did have those like bizarro magic powers and like
the, I love it.
You know, flying vampire chicks and all that.
What's so great about Scott Pilgrim, and I didn't realize it till halfway through, they spend zero amount of time explaining any of it. It just is. Ramona's got a bag that's just infinite space. That's cool. Oh, Ramona uses Scott's dreamscape to deliver Netflix DVDs faster. Literally goes, that makes sense. And they just move, like, I don't want, I understand it. Like, let's go. I love it. All in on everything sci-fi magic, throw it all in. I get it. Let's do it. It never talks down to its audience.
On Wikipedia, it says Brian Lee O'Malley was obviously very influenced, very heavily influenced by manga. But what I learned from the Wikipedia is he'd only read one manga at that point in his life. And that manga was Ranma One Half. I'm not sure if either of you are familiar.
No.
Same creator as Inuyasha, which is a more popular one. But like sort of what you're saying, where like things just are. Ranma One Half is a manga where the protagonist is a boy, like a boy martial artist who turns into a girl anytime he's splashed with cold water because of a curse. Like, that's just it.
Oh,
and I don't think that it's not like them trying to figure out that curse or like combat it. Like, that's just the fact of it. And it, you know, he just has to deal with it. So like that sort of spirit is just like you take it at face value and just like roll with it. And it's so enjoyable as an audience.
Yeah, 100%. I think that whole notion too is really clear with just how he reinvented this story. It's just like, if you're along for the ride, you're along for the ride. I mean, I would argue that someone coming in totally cold to this series might be a little confused. Like
I would agree. I think completely cold, you probably are not going to enjoy it as much, especially the end. I feel like when we get to it, it really connects it all. And it's like, oh, now I see what's going on. But there are beats you kind of want to know from the movie to make it all make sense.
Yeah,
the movie or the books, like just any of that source material to back it up, I think. But selfishly, I kind of love that because I'm also just like, as a fan, it's just like, oh, this is like, this is for me and for you. And exactly.
That's so true. Yeah. You know what? I love that even more because it's like, sure, you want to appeal to a broader audience, but like, fuck that. The people that are going to watch this are the people that love the movie.
Yeah. And that feels true of the movie too. It was such a love letter to, again, the mediums that it's sort of celebrating to the source material. And, and that is very much felt in this animated adaptation, in so much that Edgar Wright like wrote a personal email to all, like personally emailed all the cast, and they had like an old listserv or like email chain. They're all on
listserv
10 years later. It's an old college.
You just gave me PTSD saying listserv. Yeah.
Just the fact that this insane cast, everyone was down. I think like, you know, the anecdote is that within like 3 or 4 hours, everyone had replied to Edgar Wright's email that they were down. But just running down the cast list real quickly: Michael Cera, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, Satya Bhabha as Matt Vatel, Kieran Culkin, Chris Evans, Anna Kendrick, Brie Larson, Aubrey Plaza, Brandon Routh, Jason Schwartzman. These are like some of the biggest names in entertainment.
You ended on him. Let's talk about Jason Schwartzman's year that he's had. He was in Across the Spider-Verse. He was in Asteroid City. He was in this. Mm-hmm. He was in I Think You Should Leave Season 3. He's everywhere. I love him.
He's grown on me. He has grown on me this year.
Who was which Spider-Man was he in Spider-Verse?
He was the villain.
He's the villain. He's Spot.
Into. Wow. Yeah. So he wasn't a Spider-Man. Wow. That's cool.
Unless that's a twist. I didn't know in that. Three. No, I don't think it's going to be a twist.
Yes. We'll see. We'll see. I think possible.
I've liked him, gosh, probably since this movie. Maybe this is my first introduction to him, but I think he's a great actor. Everything he's in, I don't know. I think he's funny. I think he's a good actor. I love everything about him. I am a fanboy. I have been. I know I'm saying this publicly for the first time. I seem like I'm bandwagoning, but it's been years, people. I promise.
Up until a few years ago, I'm a big fan of him now, but up until a few years ago,
you didn't even recognize him.
I probably would have mistaken him for one of the guys on Big Bang Theory.
I know.
He just looks like
the movie that like really sunk and sold me on him was Moonrise Kingdom, though. I love that
he's
movie.
Great
I love
in
him
all
in
Wes
it.
Anderson stuff.
He's a staple in the Wes Anderson universe.
Gotta have him.
Let's jump around.
I got this.
Have to go
no, I know. I already know how we're gonna do this. Ready?
All right.
Scott dies, and the plot is Ramona is going to figure out who did it. Who did it? And so I figure we can kind of go through the X's and her story, and we'll talk about the characters as they pop up. But first, let's talk about Ramona. What was so funny to me is in the movie as a kid, as a youngin, I kind of just thought her hair changed. I thought it was like an emotion ring, like a mood ring. You know what I mean? So I kind of thought her hair changed. I really liked seeing her have to go through the steps in the process every time. It really showed the work and effort of her dyeing her hair.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I loved that detail. I thought that was a beautiful way to start each episode. It felt so intentional. I was going to ask you guys, I was like, is that an homage to something? Is that, like, it just felt so intentional. I was like, what is that a reference to? Because every episode started that way, and it just felt like, or it was just like a really cool design choice. And
I think it was an intentional choice. Here's kind of my thing with it. Ramona herself, not to psychoanalyze, but it's a fictional character. I feel all right doing it.
Please.
Ramona herself.
Don't get canceled, though.
Yeah, kind of. No. Okay, let me rethink this. No. Ramona is very much, especially with her League of Evil exes, each one of her exes is very much like a different stage in her life. It's a different Ramona. None of them know the same Ramona, if that makes sense. They all knew her at different points, different beings. So like when she's talking to all these new exes, she's just like, new hairstyle, because that's kind of like a thing girls do, is they're like, new me, new hair, new me. Like, you know what I mean? It's like when I shave my beard like into a mustache, that's like my version of dyeing my hair. I'm like, yes. So like each one of her exes, she kind of has to, like, I don't want to say reset herself, but like, you know, mentally she's like, nah, it's different.
New vibe.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I take it. I could be totally wrong. That's how I read it. It's art.
It's art. Read it however you want to read it, man.
Yeah. I don't know it was an homage, though, to a long way to answer your question. I don't think so, or I don't know.
Yeah, I just like this.
All
feels,
that to say, I
feels,
don't know.
Yeah.
It just felt, it felt so intentional. Yeah. I was just like, it is, what is this a reference to? But it was cool.
It is very much a nice touch. Voiced by Mary Elizabeth Winstead, Ahsoka, the Huntress. She's not Ahsoka. She's in that show as someone. I don't know.
She's in Ahsoka.
I haven't watched that show. Also, I didn't know, married to Ewan McGregor.
Recently. I don't know that either.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Good. Wow, that's a good power couple. Yeah. Do I love them? I think I love them.
No, I don't think she was in Hunger Games. That's someone else. I'm thinking of someone else. Maybe she
I can picture who you're talking about, but no, that's not her.
Yeah, okay. But Ramona Flowers is sort of like... I hope I'm using this term correctly. Clearly not a film buff, but the manic pixie dream girl, right? Like, that's what, she's that
kinda
archetype?
Yeah.
Honestly,
I like how Scott phrases it. It's the girl from his dreams.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's a real, oh my God, this is my dream girl. Because part of Ramona is like her aloofness to Scott. Yeah, like, she's almost not a real person to Scott. She's the girl of his dreams.
Mm.
Yeah, she's just elusive enough to drive him totally out of his mind, but just involved enough to keep him invested. Like, I think, she is kind of the
manic pixie dream girl.
She's kind of like the manic pixie dream. Yeah, that's what it is.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. I love their introduction. Scott and Ramona meet, and he goes, hey, did you know in the 90s there was 2 Sonic the Hedgehog cartoons? Yeah, and they were voiced by the same guy. And then he says, imagine playing 2 versions of the same character. Michael, Cera, you dog. Yeah. They love meta humor, and that is, shit up for breakfast.
There was plenty of meta stuff going on, for sure. Yeah.
So, I mean, so this series really focuses on Ramona Flowers. Mm-hmm. In that she's essentially the protagonist, and that is perhaps a point of contention for anyone who may have qualms with it.
Mm.
I don't think anyone should have qualms with it, but
not for me,
you know,
or not. No, excuse me. I don't have any qualms for it. I said not for me. Yeah. Like, I was like, yeah, not for me.
I think the only faint whiffs of any backlash, and it's all backlash I've seen, not even real backlash. It's just like people getting tweeted and ratioed to oblivion on like Twitter of like dumb takes about the show, is that like
my favorite, you know,
there are people who take issue with it being about a woman, it not being about Scott Pilgrim, you know, the...
It's kind of Ramona versus her seven evil exes this time.
Yeah.
And by versus, I mean she's gotta confront them all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I liked that spin on it where it's just more like an emotionally healthy way about handling those past relationships. And I feel like they had hints of that in both the film and the books, but they kind of really leaned into that narrative this time. Yeah, when people complain about that stuff, it's just like shouting into the void. It's just noise. But yeah, I mean, I would say that I loved that they had her at the forefront. There were points throughout where I kind of wish they even gave her a little bit more to do.
I agree.
They put a lot of it was really like over the years they have this like rock star cast, and it felt like they wanted to give everyone their just desserts. Almost at some points it felt like almost a detriment. It was like, I don't know that we need every character to have this level of development. And I felt like Ramona Flowers' journey suffered from that a little bit. Not always, but at times. Yeah.
I did like, though, just to counterpoint, exactly what you were saying is that what I like, though, is they do have such a great and awesome cast that it was almost like nice to celebrate them each a little, because like you can forget Chris Evans is in that movie. You know what I mean? He skateboards to death quickly. And oh, my God, I love all the times they made jokes of it. He's like, yeah, this guy skateboarded to his death. Like, what an idiot. Like, so good.
Yeah, well, and even the characters that would be, you know, considered a little bit more obscure, or like you never would have anticipated, but like Aubrey Plaza, like, has huge grown role. Up since that film. And they obviously, you know, utilized her a lot more for this adaptation. And so it's like, yeah, it makes sense. It's like, if you have all these people locked in and ready to jump in and play, like, you want to use as much of them as you possibly can. So I totally see that.
This
as well.
Is totally just an episode of What If. I'm just not, I like just finished the series too. So I'm like recontextualizing everything as we go through it. It's great. I love it. What, yeah.
Any thoughts? It's been a couple of days since I watched the finale. Any thoughts hot off the press for you, Alex? Because you just finished
I just finished. So episode 8, or excuse me, there's 8 episodes. So episode 7 ends with they're like, all right, all my evil exes are going to be there. Everyone's going to be in the same room and we're going to have to take them on. And you're like, yes, it is Scott Pilgrim versus the world again. And then even before the intro, so it's like the first 2 minutes, they jump in and they meet all the exes and they're like, nah, don't want to fight. Like, that's not what I'm here for. Didn't do that. Like, and they all go through and they're like, no kissing and no fighting? This is going to be the lamest finale ever. And I was like, that is so funny, because that's literally what I was thinking in that moment. I was like, that's just top-notch meta humor. Like, I had to pause the show for a second to be like, that's fucking brilliant. Because I almost didn't even realize how much time had passed till the intro came on. And I was like, oh my God, we haven't even gotten through any bit of the episode yet. They lulled me into a sense of security and pulled the rug out from under me. My favorite thing. Sorry, go on.
I'll agree with Gideon, though. I'll come out right out and say it. I could have done with less Matthew Patel. The whole him taking over the... I didn't care much for it.
It's all a what if, though. If Matthew Patel did beat Scott Pilgrim, he has this newfound confidence, and he goes and takes on the head of the CEO of the League of Evil Villains, and he wins. Honestly,
I get it. Butterfly effect, whatever.
That was the part where really twisted me. As much as like Scott dying was such a twist, Gideon losing to Matthew Patel also was a huge twist. And I'm not going to lie, this Gideon-Matthew Patel fight could have been up there as one of the best fights in the series.
Yeah, that was definitely up there in the fights. My favorite, and sorry guys if I'm jumping around.
We're professional jumpers around. We already talked about the ending, please.
Well, speaking of the fights, Mae Whitman's character, Roxy, that was sick. Yeah. That was probably my favorite fight of the whole series.
In the movie store.
The traveling through the different types of film. Also, just like the emotion behind that one felt the most like earnest. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, I can't quite put my finger on it, but that fight was sick. And it was so well choreographed and directed and stylized. Like, I loved that fight so much.
The emotional stakes is what made it really good for me, because like you said, Ramona didn't realize necessarily the path of heartbreak that she's left. And this girl who was her roommate, that she was like, we weren't that serious. Mm-hmm. This girl's been thinking about it ever since. And to see Ramona realize that, and also the fight ended by her just apologizing. Like, God. Yeah. That is such an anime trope. The power of friendship wins out. My favorite. Oh, my God.
Mae Whitman famously voices Katara in Avatar The Last Airbender. But that fight one is incredible. But also that reconciliation, because Ramona does have reconciles with all of her exes throughout the series. But, you know, when you start with Chris Evans, Lucas Lee, he's kind of dopey. Like, there's a bit of a joke in that he's like just like this, I don't know, dope of a man. But, like, it does get much more earnest, and like you know, as the series progresses, like there's like, oh, there is this sort of emotional truth underlying it all that makes this a lot more impactful than just fun, nostalgic, kind of nerdy, you know.
What was your favorite fight, Evan?
It's gotta be final episode. Or spoiler, Scott Pilgrim fights old Scott Pilgrim. Older Scott Pilgrim, I'm sorry.
Even older Scott Pilgrim was his name.
Voiced by Will Forte.
Love Will Forte.
He's got to be a new addition, I believe.
I think he's the only new addition, if I'm being honest.
I don't believe so. Because Bowen Yang is on this cast list.
Oh, yeah, that's a new addition.
Who he play. Oh, TV Gossips. Bowen Yang and Matt Rogers play TV Gossips. Also, nod to Shaun of the Dead. Simon Pegg and Nick Frost are the studio security.
Okay, that makes sense because of the accent. Okay, that is a great fight. I mean, obviously, that is one of the best fights. But you guys are gonna make fun of me. I think my favorite part is Lucas Lee versus the paparazzi. I've watched it so many times. I'm a Tony Hawk pro skater fan, and Lucas Lee is the Tony Hawk of this universe, as far as I'm concerned. And I just love that. And like, once again, the paparazzi are all these ninjas. No explanation. Just dive into it. I love it. And they're chasing him, and there's a bazillion of them, and he's skateboarding through everything and anything. Gosh, give me 70 more episodes of that.
Yeah. That one's sweet because it's got like the camera work going all around him. And it feels like, you know, you're sort of flying around on the skateboard with him. Which brings me to another thought is like one of the things I love about this series and how it's animated is that it's very lo-fi. Like the backgrounds and stuff are sort of like hodgepodge, very rough, like CGI at times, or like, but it almost looks like a very rough or maybe slightly less rough, animatic of like when you watch like famous anime fights,
storyboards,
sequences get storyboarded or how those come together. Like, it sort of gives off that effect, but. I just really loved
I love it.
The lo-fi
feel. I love it, though. It gives it a comic book feel, or a graphic novel feel to me, which is great. Guys, I'm going to be honest. I kind of liked getting to know the evil exes on a different level. I thought it was really fun. We got to see, like, what they do and what they're about. And like you said, we had some reconciliation with all of them. And I thought Lucas Lee was hilarious. We haven't even gotten into this. We could do it in a minute. But he's playing Scott Pilgrim in the show. And he goes, did you know there's a Lucas Lee in this? He goes, did you know Lucas Lee's in this film? She goes, yeah, you're the star. He goes, no, there's a Lucas Lee character. Because he was an idiot, though. He skateboard grinded himself to death. I would never. It's funny. But those kind of things, you need to know the movie. And I mean, I guess to get into our plot is another one of my maybe favorite characters in this. Young Neil writes a movie in his sleep about Scott Pilgrim's life.
Yeah. Which is the plot of the movie, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World.
Which we could also, major spoilers, probably call the main timeline.
Yes. Okay. Let's get into it.
Evan's mad. Let's do it.
The big twist, or the second big twist of this series, is that Scott Pilgrim didn't die. He was pulled into the future by his future self, voiced by Will Forte, who is reeling from a divorce with Ramona.
Yeah.
And so that's
how true to form, though. They said, this is what I love about this whole show. They said, where are Scott and Ramona in 25 years? And someone was like, they probably are getting a divorce. And he was like, Scott would do anything to prevent that, even create time travel.
I didn't know we were avoiding spoilers.
No, you're fine. No, we're not. We're not. Especially not anymore. If you haven't watched it, go watch it. It's so fun.
Yeah, go watch it. But I loved all of that so much. That I was like, oh, I want a little bit more of this. I wanted like one earlier reveal of Will Forte as old Scott, because he just was such a good, like he sounds nothing like Michael Cera, like not even at all, but he is that like lovable idiot that means well, but like is just kind of like you have to roll your eyes at. I don't know if either of you saw Last Man on I think it was Last Man on Earth with Will Forte. It was a show on Fox, maybe had like a 4-season run, but I was just getting that whole vibe from him again.
His huge
for this
beard, and
I just loved it. I loved it so much.
With a touch of the like the whininess of his character in I Think You Should Leave, that gets trapped under the car.
The ponytail guy, No. You can't do that. You got me into this mess. You can't cut off my ponytail.
But, I mean, that reveals what? Second to last episode? Third to last episode?
It's at the very end of 6, and then 7, we spend most of the time in future. Scott shows up at the door, and he's like, it was me. At the who did it, not the who done it. This is why young Neil was so funny to me, because I feel like in the movie, I didn't understand young Neil at all. But this, I was like, oh, young Neil's brilliant. Okay, just while we're here, who was your favorite character of the whole thing?
Ooh, that's tough.
I know.
Okay, mine is a little bit of recency bias, having just watched the live action movie. But Brandon Routh as Todd Ingram, the vegan jokes really hit for me 10 years later. Like, they were still funny. They're not that
the
like
vegan powers.
They're not like highbrow or anything. They're just so good.
I think it's literally the simple joke of, vegans love to tell you they're vegan.
Yeah,
he was solid. I don't know. Like, I think I'd go. I love Wallace Wells. I loved him in the film.
Yeah.
I love him in this series. I think part of that is also my just love of Succession. I just feel like Kieran Culkin is so much just himself with what he does.
Yeah.
So I think I just might like him as a person. I saw like his Hot Ones interview and I was like, you seem kind of like you're the shit. So I would say like he's up there for me. I will say just in response to that question too, though, I was really impressed with how subtly Michael Cera was kind of able to reinvent it a little bit. Like, I felt like he did it better this time around. It was almost like, as a younger man, he was a little bit more
awkward.
I'm a movie star right now. Awkward and just kind of like,
I see what you're saying.
Not full of himself, but like it almost like he held that weight a little more. It felt like he was able to like have a little bit more fun with it this time around. And I just felt like that translated in some of the subtleties of his voice performance. Yeah. But Wallace Wells always is kind of up here for me.
I think Wallace and young Neil had like the biggest glow up from the movie to the show. They were like such funny, great additions to the show for me. I just don't know I could top Lucas Lee, though. I think I loved everything he did and said. I was obsessed.
Yeah.
He was great.
I think all of the voice actors did phenomenal job. It's great. It's great hearing their voices as these characters again. But there were two in particular that I think did very well at the anime medium specifically. And one is Michael Cera. The other, I think it was Aubrey Plaza. I forgot to jot it down, but I'm pretty sure it's Aubrey Plaza. But like the intonations, like the intensity, particularly in the last fight when Scott is fighting older Scott, there's a line he yells like, "Let me live my life." And it's like, Michael Cera really does, you know, the shonen main character voice. Like, he just like, it's not method acting, but like he very much is an anime voice actor in that moment. And I was like, I really appreciate that touch, because, you know, most of these other characters, it's very similar to their
everyday speak.
Yeah, it's not like something huge. And a complaint a lot of times in animated stuff is that like movie stars don't really bring it for voice acting stuff. Yeah, so
true.
Not that anyone here did a bad job, but I want Michael Cera to voice more anime characters.
I think this actually is such a good indication of, because it's not every actor, especially big name actors, that can't just come over to the medium and just nail it right away. I hadn't thought about it, but I think you guys are right. Maybe because he took off a little early, but I think Michael Cera killed it, and especially towards the end, he was really emotional, really into it. So I totally see that. And also, just while we're talking about it, I love that the last episode was the world versus Scott Pilgrim. Like, this timeline, everything's flipped on its head because Scott messed with the timeline, and now he goes, oh, I get it, you're the big bad. And then we get that whiny Will Forte. What? No, I'm the good guy.
Really?
Dude, whiny Will Forte.
Yeah, really nailing the point home that, like, Scott Pilgrim is not, like, an admirable hero. He's just, like, this lazy 20-something.
Let's get into the weird parts. I liked that they addressed that it was weird that he was dating Knives Chow. You know, I guess they do in the movie a little bit, but I feel like they really kind of addressed it more here. And sort of the cheating that he does, as short-lived as it was, like, still not cool, even though he was dating a high schooler. Not cool either way.
Yeah, there was a lot that I noticed they updated for an audience of today, rightfully so. I think what's awesome is if you can lean in and make those kind of corrections with grace and make it work, like, I'm all for that. And yeah, there was, you know, it was definitely like kind of bringing up the knives thing and the weirdness of that. I think even just kind of like legitimizing the relationships that Wallace was developing with Todd. Like,
that was so funny.
Instead of it being kind of like the butt of a joke when he like seduces Scott's sister's, you know, date at the Rocket. Like,
yeah,
there was just more legitimacy to all of it. It never felt like weird or like anyone was the butt of a joke. And I felt like the film kind of suffered from that occasionally, but it was just, you know, 10 years more, it's like a lot's changed and a lot of people have kind of opened their eyes to those kind of things. So
Having watched the movie today, they do talk about how weird him dating Knives Chow is, and so I don't know if that's progressive or like, I mean, for 2010, but it feels weirder in 2023, like the bare but they minimum. Were saying the same thing in 2010. But it also helped me not rationalize, contextualize a little bit watching the storyline condensed in the movie today, watching Scott and Knives interact, and then also meeting his ex, Clash of Demon Head Girl,
forgetting
her name, Allison Brie. Yeah.
Envy.
And here's my theory.
Her name being Envy is just brilliant. Go on, sorry.
My theory is that Scott Pilgrim is dating this high schooler because she's so young and naive, and the only person who is naive enough to view him with as much reverence as maybe the gap between him and Envy is, or not see any of his flaws.
Sort of holding a rock star, and he wants to be a rock star.
Sort of holding him in the light that, you know, people that maybe misunderstand the original Scott Pilgrim is hold that character in.
His ex being called Envy is so great because that was the whole thing with all of her exes, was he was just envious of the time they had. Like I said, this really, as a young man, taught me, like, why am I mad at these exes? Like, they're not together still. Like, you don't need to love them, but you also don't need to be like, hey, get out of here. Like, you don't need to fight them every time you see them.
Mm-hmm.
That depends.
Yeah.
I did see a theory or some discourse suggesting that Scott and Wallace may have hooked up at some point. I don't know if that's suggested in the comments. Cause now that I think back, I don't think I've actually read the entire graphic.
I think people just read the two of them sharing a bed as like, oh, they did. Oh, well, and they call him his sugar baby a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like some good fanfic.
Yeah.
I haven't, I feel like I purposely didn't revisit the books before I dove into
the show,
the series. Just, yeah, I was just like, I almost want it to be a little bit far out of my brain. Mm-hmm. So I can go into this completely fresh.
Well,
yeah.
And I think you did this almost instinctually. I really think the three things kind of live as their own, which is really nice. It's not like, I don't know, like I can't think of a good example off the top of my head.
Full Metal Alchemist and Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood.
Oh, well, those are different. Don't even give me those different universes. Okay. My example is the live action, I do in air quotes, Lion King movie. It's just beat for beat the movie, The Lion King, in a different medium. It's fun one time to watch, but like I'm never going to go revisit that. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't care to. I'm going to watch the cartoon if I'm going to watch any. This, I will revisit because it was, shit, it might have been better than the fucking movie. I really enjoyed it. I had so much fun every episode. And maybe because I kind of sparsed it out, I watched like one a day. I always, always was like so excited to watch it. It was like the highlight of my day. I was like, oh, I get to watch the episode now. Because, oh, here's the other thing. Sometimes I'll watch things while I work and it's on my phone. And I watch the first episode and I go, I have to watch this on my TV. I go, I need to, and I got to pay attention during these fight scenes, I feel like. And I was right. And it was, everything about it, I thought was so well done.
Yeah, you've actually kind of swayed my thinking on it, because I definitely was a little bit more in the camp of like, I might be a little disappointed by this. Mm-hmm. I wanted it to be a pure, but I'm like, I think if you look at it as, three different things, you know, three entirely different takes, it's kind of easier to just lean in and enjoy it. So thank you so much for opening my eyes.
Of course. No, this is what we do here, though. Not to bring up the mission of the podcast, but like, animation is always underappreciated for one reason or another. Not saying this is what you were doing, but we got to bring light to like, it's just as equal of a medium. And especially when done right like this, it elevates properties, in my opinion. So this is one of those things that I think is, like I said, it's not detracting. Like, you can rank the movie, the book, whatever. It's not detracting away from the movie at all. You can still love that movie and still like enjoy this to the max, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, I have to give a lot of credit to Brian Lee O'Malley and, you know, Edgar Wright as well. But it's like, okay, take this very successful comic book and story that you wrote and created that is sold millions of copies, widely beloved. Now let's turn it into a movie 10 years later. Let's adapt this into animation. And rather than doing beat for beat, he's like, let's blow the fuck up. Let's just, whatever, throw all expectations out the window. And he's like really re-examining his own work in a way and like, okay, how do we build on? How do we expand? Mm-hmm. How do we improve?
I love, and this is part of the meta-ness, so maybe if you don't like meta stuff, you wouldn't enjoy this, but I love that it addresses the movie as, like, canon, almost. Like, this is what happened, but then later on, Scott went and changed the whole timeline because he was so heartbroken. Like, that's really funny to me, and it's really almost, it's like a powerful storytelling technique that they did to explain why they were telling this new story. It all stemmed from Scott and Ramona's relationship that this weird alternate timeline even took place. And like, if that's not the power of love, baby, what is?
It turns the Scott Pilgrim story, Scott Pilgrim had to battle seven evil exes for Ramona Flowers, into this like baseline fable lore that gets told and it's like a parable at this point. And like, it's parable. I don't know.
Yes.
Everything about this is a ton of
fun. And speaking of that power of love, they lean in heavy to a DeLorean reference at the end with the rollerblades.
Because I go 88 miles on these rollerblades and I could go, and she goes, I don't know what that is in kilometers though. I love all the American Canadian humor they do. Yeah. Like, even things I wouldn't have picked up on in 2010, just like the poutine on his fries. Like, I didn't know what that was. Now I do. Question for you both. Skateboard or rollerblades? Which one are you picking?
I don't know how to skateboard.
I'm skateboard.
So I'm going to have to go rollerblades, although I'm pretty bad at that.
I'm gonna go the opposite of Evan. I don't know how to skateboard, but I'm taking that skateboard too.
Yeah, I gotta go skateboard. It's cooler.
Oh, for sure. Yeah,
it's cooler? Question mark. Can I say that? No, it definitely is.
I'm the finale, though. Maybe let's dig into it a little bit. We meet. We have Scott battling his older self, and then we also see an older version of Ramona.
Hold on, before you get there. the movie failed, so they're going to do a Broadway adaptation. So everyone is showing up to the premiere of Matthew Patel. I love that the evil exes cycle through who's playing Scott Pilgrim in this show. It's so funny to me. But so Matthew Patel's playing it on Broadway. Everyone's in one room together. Even older Scott is what his name is, takes them all to a battle. And it's awesome. Continue with what you're saying. I had to interrupt about the Broadway.
But in like the climactic moment of the battle, Ramona combines with future Ramona in learning to love herself and becomes super Ramona. And in my favorite full circle joke of the moment, they call back to one of the early episodes where they mentioned Sonic, and both Scott's turn on and goes, "It's like Sonic 2 or whatever.
It's like Sonic."
The specific.
He goes, It's like Sonic 2. And one says, "It's like Sonic 3. He goes, "Oh, it is like Sonic 3.
That was great. You know, reminded me of kind of the wrap up of the film, and just kind of like, I don't know, different manifestations of yourself and like how you interact with your past self or your future self or whatever it is, or your alternate self. Like, I liked that they played with that a lot in this series and like expanded on it more. You know, the film ends with him and that other Scott version of himself. I'm not naming it correctly. And they like walk off and go like get dinner together or something. Like the whole movie kind of wraps up with that as like a joke. So I really enjoyed that they leaned into that for this and like found new ways to bring it to life.
All right. This brings me to an interesting question, potentially a deep one, a personal one. Oh. But in the spirit of time travel, like the story in the animated adaptation, future selves, past selves, all that, what is the lesson you think you could impart on your past self from this point in your life? And what is the lesson that you think you need to learn from your future self?
Oh.
This guy.
Okay, I got the first one. I love time travel. Yeah, I think it's my favorite trope. And I think when done properly, it's... you know, right now we're getting all, I'm going to go on a tangent before we answer so you guys can think of what you're going to say. We're getting all these multiverse stories, and a lot of it's just like to show cameos and different worlds and all this. But when time travel / multiverse, different timelines, is done properly, it's a story of Scott in this case was like, look, I need to live my life. I have to learn these lessons hard way, easy way, whatever it's going to be. But if I'm not going to become you because I now know what you have imparted on me. It's so, I love the whole idea of like changing your destiny or fate through time travel. Like Scott's like, I'm not going to become you. You have to let me live my life. But I think if I could go, I'm 30. Oh fuck. If I could go like 15 years in the past, I would, tell myself not to, get so angry about small things. Keep it chill. You'll enjoy life a lot more.
Do you have a lesson you're hoping for from your future self?
Yeah, my future self needs to teach me how not to procrastinate at every single thing I've ever done in my life ever.
All right. I like that. I'll go. For my past self, I would say work harder. For a lesson I need from my future self is work less.
That's good.
It's all about balance.
There's a balance. There's a... I think we could write yours into a movie, the more I'm thinking about it.
I think I'm at the apex of working hard right now. Kind of sucks.
Yeah, dude, that's so concise. And like,
you're welcome
the
to
short,
it.
The he way shorter
he
version.
He came up with the question, so I was, don't even.
I was formulating that answer as I was formulating the question.
He had 2 weeks. Yeah, no, I'm just...
Because I was like, what thing am I going to pontificate about that is basically what you just said in like 5 words? But very similar, man. I would tell my past self to embrace what I'm up to and work a little harder at it. Don't be so distracted by the bullshit going on over here. Mm-hmm. And then, my future self, I hope, can tell me to just, you know, take it easy, man. Take it down a notch. Sure.
Yeah.
You've got time. You've got life to live.
See, this is what I love about time travel, though. Think of we just came up with 3 great premises, I feel like.
But also, in the spirit of the show, I think articulating that is allowing myself some grace in the present moment. So.
I agree.
Thank God for Scott Pilgrim.
You're not going to become even older Evan.
Hopefully. I'm definitely not.
He goes, I spent 10 years alone in a
not
room.
Getting buff.
And she goes, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not getting
I also like even older Scott was like, I spent 10 years alone in a room. Like Ramona did that to him. And she was like, you didn't even text. You didn't even call. Like, and he was like, what do you wait, you wanted me to? And she was like, well, yeah, I would have loved that. And so it was like a lesson of like that, not self-fulfilling prophecy, but like you did this to yourself just a little bit, buddy.
Oh yeah. He's like the king of being his own worst enemy. Like that's.
Yeah. Oh, and he had to fight himself at the end. He's his literal own worst enemy. God, that's great. God. Evan and I are wannabe movie critics. We're also wannabe chefs.
We're all doing more cooking at home now. If you want to elevate your home cooking, you need nice tools to do it. Louis Kitchenware will get you there. They have beautiful stainless steel pans, nonstick bakeware, knives, all the stuff you need. Safe, high-quality materials, constructed to last, made in the United States. Founded in Detroit.
Moving into my condo, we got hand-me-downs. So this new Louis Kitchenware has been great, and we love the discount. We want to share that with our listeners.
You can use code 2DUDES, that's T-W-O DUDES, at louiskitchenware.com, and that'll give you 10% off anything on the site.
Check out our link in bio.
Two dudes watch cartoons. Yeah, yeah.
I think now's a good time to do our closing thoughts, as we call them. And then we're going to move into like a letterbox review. So just kind of an overall summation, thoughts, feelings, any last thoughts you really want to get out on Scott Pilgrim Takes Off. And then we're going to rate it 1 to 5 stars, or I guess 0 to 5 stars, technically you could do. But I'll start. I'm here. I'm talking. So I really enjoyed the movie Scott Pilgrim versus the World. I was always really into it. If I saw it on TV, I'd watch it. It got me to start reading the books. I didn't finish them because I procrastinate and I'm lazy. But when this was coming out, I was like generally excited. I was like, oh, cool. That'll be fun. I didn't know I would end up like falling in love with this new sort of. I've settled with Remix is fine. I like Remix. It's a wrinkle in time. It's really fun. It's a great retelling of a different story with the characters are true to themselves, though, so it all feels very natural and normal. And when you find out how it connects and plays with the movie, your knowledge of the movie and the books, it becomes like a payoff, and it's fun, it's enjoyable, the animation is beautiful. They were able to get every original voice actor to return, which is just phenomenal in today's day and age, especially with the star-studded cast that they got. I feel like I can't give this anything lower than a 5-star, if I'm being honest. I enjoyed it every episode. I'm going to watch it again in the month of December, I already know.
Well put.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah,
shit. I just went off. Shit. I just took off. Yeah.
Oh, damn. Yeah. I mean, I'd echo a lot of those sentiments. I have to say, you know, I will always have that little tiny voice in my head that was looking for the true to form adaptation of the books brought to life in an animated format. But when I can get over that and lean into some of the eloquent points you made about treating it like it's its own piece of art. The animation was incredible. Seeing these fights come to life in a way that was more fluid and true to the format. You know, it wasn't like live action choreographed. Like, that was just sick. The development of some of the characters, I wasn't in love with all of it, but for what they did with all of them, there were moments that it really came through for me. Like, you know, I had mentioned Wallace. I felt like Michael Cera this time around. Seeing more with Ramona and seeing what she had to do, like, it just made it all feel a lot richer.
Yes. Filled in this world a ton.
I think I'll always lean into this feeling that, like, I felt like the beginning and end were incredible. I felt like it just was its tightest in the beginning and the end. I felt like there were some moments in the middle that got a little wonky for me. So I will give it a 4 out of 5.
We love it. We'll take
respectably.
That.
Respectably. Yeah. And I will absolutely, it's one of those ones, you know, that I will revisit. And I think my opinion may change.
Yeah, no, I totally know what you mean.
Now that I've gotten over my own bullshit, when I need to get... I need to get out of my own way, you know? I need to
stop being my own worst enemy.
Enemy.
Yes. Yeah. We're learning lessons. I love this podcast.
So yeah, I'll give it a solid 4 out of 5. Yeah, it was just fun to look at. Like, just a beautiful thing to look at.
Evan, I'm going to go use my time travel to go tell Gideon, hey, it's its own thing. It's not an adaptation. Yeah. Just a little warning. And I think we get that full star. No, I totally agree. And I totally get what you're saying. I think I was expecting that too. I just was pleasantly surprised. I love when the rugs pulled out from under
me. We were expecting Scott Pilgrim Brotherhood, and we got something totally new.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. The series is, you know, throws all your expectations out the window. Starting the series, I was intrigued, then I was charmed, and then in the last couple episodes, I was just really, really blown away at how it wrapped it all together into something more than just like... as charmed as I was with the first handful of episodes. The animation is this like lo-fi, like love letter to comics and video games, and very much so, very similar to the 2010 movie, which I was watching today. And I was thinking as I was watching that on Netflix, I was like, man, when Netflix first started streaming, like this kind of movie dominated. This was the promise of Netflix. Yeah. And now it's, we don't really get these like mid to low budget indie-ish movies that are like daring anymore. So that made me a little bit sad, but then I was like, okay, it's here. And I also get this new version of it. It's so fun to watch. I definitely want to watch it again. I can see myself, maybe not annually, but like watching this regularly, like in Over the Garden Wall. Like there's
every week.
Every week. But like there's just so much to enjoy in it. I think I'll land right in the middle, 4.5, respectable score.
Those are great. We'll take
out of
it.
Five.
Yes.
Do we want to look at some Letterboxd reviews? I think I got maybe one or two that
I thought I saw a funny one, but I don't have it up at the moment. So pardon my delay, but I think there's a couple good ones. I still think the whole Sonic thing actually like really wraps up just how like beautiful this is. They embrace like the meta commentary, the time travel, like the circular. It was in the first and the last episode brought up. It just, I love that sort of shit. And we all learned some good lessons along the way.
This one, I think sums some of this up. It's 3.5 stars. This person writes, those guys who idolized Scott in the movie are going to fucking hate this. And I think that's like one of the right lessons to learn, you know?
That's good.
It's a good litmus test.
This one's 5 stars. I'm in lesbians with this show. That's how I feel.
Yeah.
Oh, we didn't even. There was so many great references. The Bread musical. I like forgot about that scene where he's like, I could eat bread all day. And she's like, bread makes you fat. He goes, bread makes you fat? She goes, yeah. And they're making the musical and they're like, bread makes you fat. I'm like, dude, no way. This is so funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Lots of good callbacks.
The Clash of the Demons song also is a jam.
Oh.
Hello.
They're so good.
Again. Yeah.
They think they're terrible. That's also a lesson.
Yeah.
They are so positive they're a bad band. They really, they're their own worst enemy. Because they're a great band. Someone said, 5 stars, my whole personality for the next few months. Spot on. Spot on. That's me.
Yeah. So, I mean, we average a 4.5 between the three of us. I think that's how averages work. Maybe that math doesn't come out exactly.
No. You got it. News. Let's get some news.
This a little bit related in the world of time travel, but Loki creator, showrunner Michael Waldron is set to write Avengers The Kang Dynasty. I think they kind of overhauled whoever was working on it previously. Gideon, have you watched season 2 of Loki?
I watched season 1. I haven't gotten to season 2 yet. But are they... I saw somewhere that they were like moving away from calling it the Kang Dynasty altogether and just moving away from like the Kang storyline.
I could totally see them doing that. And I think them bringing in the Loki showrunner is going to be the way they do that. If that makes I don't want to spoil Loki for you. You should go watch it. Yeah. It's really good.
Yeah, that's on my list. I have a lot of things that I need, like Invincible 2.
Oh, it's good too.
Scavenger's Reign. Like, there's a few things on my list that I am just like, when you got a 2-year-old, it's tough to
for
to
sure.
To fit it all in.
I understand.
I guess Loki season one is time travel. I was going to say, if you enjoyed the last couple episodes of Scott Pilgrim, you'll enjoy this one. But yeah, it's a little more time travel-y.
Right on.
I got more of a fun fact than some news here. But Michael Cera played Brother Bear in the Berenstain Bears 2003 movie. He was the voice. I thought this was like a joke on Twitter, but no, it's a real fact that I think everyone should know.
I guess
I can totally see.
Yeah,
that.
I know. It's
that
just I was mind
really
blown
think
when
of
I read
Michael
that.
Cera as a child actor, but he was in Arrested Development as really,
and he was great in Arrested Development. Oh, him and Mae Whitman reunite on this film, and they dated, and that's actually hilarious. I got one more news. If you got any more, Evan, you can go first.
You go ahead.
Our favorite series, Avatar. James Cameron says Avatar 3 is going to go into a very hectic 2-year post-production, and I want to add my prediction that we should double that.
Dude, I've never seen them. I've never seen one or...
Watch them.
You know what?
They're fine.
Water one.
So, ready for this? Yeah. You are in, like, the minority of the population in that regard, I think. Like, I think most people have at least seen one, if not both now. I can't sit here and be like, yeah, go check it out. But, like, you could like it. There's a lot of people that love it. So, like, I hate yucking people's yum, but I tend to do it very strongly when it comes to Avatar.
It's kind of like, I kind of feel like I've seen it by association just from hearing about
commercials,
it.
Commercials, clips, you caught enough. I totally get what you mean.
Like, I literally watched the entirety of the most recent Top Gun, the Top Gun Maverick, over someone's shoulder on an airplane on mute. And I was like, I know what happens.
That is my favorite hobby to do, just watching someone's movie on mute. And I'm like, and I know what's going on. I know what's going on.
It's definitely a movie to watch on a plane.
Real quick.
Especially if it's a long flight.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Real quick, I wanted to, and take or leave this, I wanted to circle back to something. I wanted to see if you guys noticed this in the last episode. I mean, it was pretty overt, but like, I don't know if it was meant to be something bigger. But there's a moment with Matthew, and I think it's Gideon or Goose, now Aubrey Plaza's character, whose name is escaping me, but it's the three of them on stage at the end after, Julie Power, after curtain drops, and they have like this weird kind of maniacal laugh moment, the three of them. And I was like, is that like a hint of maybe a spinoff series? Depending, obviously, on how successful this is, I don't know, just. It felt like a beat with the three of them.
No, it was definitely a focus of him. Yes, a beat.
Yeah.
I kind of took it as like they all just had these evil plots they were doing and succeeded in. But the more I'm thinking about it, the more I think you could be right. Because remember when Gideon goes, remember when it looked like I was doing nothing at all? What if I told you I was secretly planning to get revenge this whole time?
Wasn't there a post-credits thing or like the stingers?
Don't tell me. I didn't
see
it.
It's like someone sitting in front of a bunch of red screens and it feels like a tease for season two, but they've been very overt about saying there's no plans for season two. I'm not making that up, am I?
Interesting.
I didn't see it. It doesn't mean it doesn't exist. I tend to turn things off fast. I've left
Marvel
movies before it comes up.
Yeah, I don't feel like Netflix honors the post-credits scene because I feel like they immediately make that screen tiny.
You know,
like,
what, though?
What are you watching next?
I've realized I think they do. I think we're just so trained that it'll come on naturally if there's nothing in the credits, but they'll just wait longer and you're like, what's going on? And you'll just hit next episode. I think it's happened to me before in an anime in particular. True. I was like, hold on, I missed something here. And I went back and I was like, oh, there was something
after the
credits.
Okay, according to Wikipedia, in a mid-credits scene, Gordon and Julie seemingly plot against Scott and Romanos, which seemed, I don't know. So maybe, I don't know if it was a scene you were referring to. No, because...
No. This is, when the curtain's closing.
It's, it's such a brief moment at the end of the finale. Okay. And it was like...
More.
I feel like I've seen Edgar Wright or...
I saw the director specifically was like, and people were like, well, the way Netflix cancels shows, this is a good thing. They're going to get a second season. Anything that's successful enough, I hate to be that guy, but like they will renew you if you're making them money.
Well, I got a bit of news. Gideon, I believe I saw you sipping from a cup that has Superman on it. Hell yeah. What just happened? Oh my God! What is my webcam doing?
This is our daily pitch to go watch our YouTube. You will not believe what just happened on Evan's screen.
That was a very Scott Pilgrim appropriate thing to happen.
We're
big DC fans, DC Films fans. James Gunn's Superman movie that's in the works has already cast its main leads, but they've added, is his name Nicholas Holt, right? Holt from the X-Men First Class movies and a lot of other stuff that I can't.
The Menu.
Oh, there's a good one. Has been cast as Lex Luthor. He was in the running for Superman. He was in the running for the Batman. He's lost out on a couple of these DC roles.
That rage he will feel to Superman, I think, will be real and genuine.
Who did they just do for Jimmy Olsen, who's like
Skyler something.
Skyler, I don't know what he's on the Righteous Gemstones. Okay. You've seen him in stuff. Yeah, he's in Booksmart. Well, he is Jimmy Olsen. It's crazy.
I was like, that's perfect. Like, that's why I am so stoked for that whole project, is because I feel like James Gunn is the guy to just do it. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. It's just been so long. I feel like I feel like not to get off on a Superman tangent, but Superman Returns. I felt like that didn't really get its just desserts, and I feel like it's aging poorly because of the existence of Kevin Spacey and like all this shit about Bryan Singer. And it's
I forgot Bryan Singer directed that.
Yeah,
but it stars.
Anyway, I'm stoked for
Vegan Todd. What's his name? Brandon Routh.
Yes, Brandon Routh. Yeah.
That really launched and kind of killed his career, unfortunately.
Yeah, it did.
Vegan Todd. Yeah. He got vegan magic powers. It was so good.
Yeah, see, it all links back.
And
it
love the envy. She's like, that's clearly not Todd's portal. Look how neat and nice it is. No human could ever make this. I just, like I said, you just go with it, and it's so fun.
James Gunn is, you know, great at comic book adaptations, so I have a lot of faith in him. I'm very much looking forward to that.
You got anything else?
One bit of news for my new segment, All That Zazz. And All That Zazz. This tweet says, from Deadline, Bob Iger and other Disney execs say their main goal now is, quote, quality over quantity. 100 years in, that's good to you know.
That's the strategy.
Oh, yeah. They figured it out.
They figured it out.
It was 100 years in.
But I mean, this follows a $47 million opening weekend for The Marvels, starring Brie Larson, Envy, Clash of the Demon Head, and a $31.7 million box office take for Wish, their latest animated movie. And that's over the 5-day Thanksgiving weekend. But
wait, what was The Marvels?
$47 million opening weekend.
That's okay.
Not great. Yeah.
No, sorry. I didn't know. I knew it wasn't doing well, but I don't think I had heard the number.
I haven't seen reviews. I don't know.
No comment.
No comment. Yeah. I don't. I wish it well.
It is unfortunate. It is at a very unfortunate intersection in Marvel's history. And there's already the weirdo creeps who are just going to hate it because of its stars and director.
Yeah. True.
Yeah.
All this to say, I think, you know, as much as I love Netflix for stuff like this, Scott Pilgrim Takes Off, and the One Piece live action adaptation, I feel like for all the other big studios, the streaming experiment has pretty much failed. The rush to create all the content in the world has gotten them virtually nowhere. So,
oh my gosh, I actually think you're so right that the Disney Plus has like totally tanked Star Wars, Marvel, all of their movie prospects. Oh my God, it's 200% Disney Plus's fault. Yeah. Sorry, I've just never thought of that. You're so right.
Yeah. So that's all I got.
Gideon, thank you for being here. Do you have anything before I wrap us up? People follow you on Instagram, plug. What would you like people to go check out?
Yeah, man. If you want to follow my Insta, it's just my name, Gideon Vergadamo. It's fun, relatable.
Yeah.
Dad comics. If you happen to be in Rockefeller Center and you want to swing by the Lego store and check out the holiday windows, they're up through the season. Check them out. They're rad. There's a lot of brick built beautiful skylines, and
I love it.
It's, you know, gives you the warm and fuzzies for the holiday season.
What, one last Lego question. How long did that Home Alone house take you?
Probably longer than I needed to, but I have to like balance my normal non-Lego life with my, okay, honey, I'm going to build Lego now. So it was probably like close to between 8 and 10 hour endeavor, broken up over, you know, multiple weeks.
That would take me years.
Yeah. Dude, I have to say, to just one more Lego thing, is just like the amount of detail that the designers put into these sets. And I will say, here's a fun Lego fact. Every master builder is challenged to design a set using only existing pieces up until this point. So it is very rare that you will buy a Lego set that has a unique piece made for that set. Mm. So that's why, like, you know, there's like, they'll find dual use out of like a croissant piece or a hot dog. And I'm going all food for whatever reason. But to me, when I started working at Lego, that was like one of the coolest factoids I got from them. It's just like, they are challenged to only use existing pieces in the Lego brick library.
That is interesting. I love that.
I love that it's called 100% the Lego brick library. That sounds so prestigious.
Dude, honestly, I might have just made that shit up.
You need to go tell them to patent that.
Yeah, I need to take it up the food chain. Yeah, and if you guys ever want to cover a Lego animated.
Oh, and those movies are good. Mm. That was when Chris Pratt was doing good voice acting.
Yeah. Hit us up for Lego Garfield. Whenever that comes out.
An the intersection of crossover. Greatness. Oh, that's good. Thank you again for coming here, Gideon. This was a lot of fun.
Dude, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
It was my pleasure.
I'm going to wrap us up here. If you enjoyed this episode, please go check out more on Apple, Spotify, and you can watch our episodes on YouTube as well. Please follow us at Two Dudes Watch Cartoons on Instagram and TikTok. And wherever you're watching this, don't forget to like, leave a review. It helps new people find us. And we're trying to spread the power of love to everybody today. So thank you for listening. And get us out of here, Evan.
That'll do it for this episode of Two Dudes Watch Cartoons. We'll catch you next time. Two Dudes Watch Cartoons.